Hello and welcome to the PQA Studios podcast. Today's episode is the second half of the 2020 Story Slam event with us, your hosts, Sam White
and Darcy Kent. If you haven't listened to part one, then don't miss out on some more wonderful stories and go and have a listen. Our stories today are told by our fellow performers. Their stories are based on a challenge they have faced in their lives.
Have you stood up for yourself in a tricky situation?
Have you ever come to terms with something you can't change?
Or even killed that spider that has been lurking in your room for days?
Story Slam is a collection of true stories told by live performers in training at PQA Studios.
Story Slams happen all around the world and is an opportunity for everyday people to share their stories and experiences through the art of storytelling.
Our first story will be told by Shauna O'Donnell and is called Accepting Myself.
So, I've been lying to myself for some time now. I think I've always known deep down, but I never actually wanted to admit it to myself, purely just because a lot of people are quite judgmental about it. And I don't think they'd actually understand my point of view. I mean, growing up, a lot of kids were quite horrible to me and they call me like really rude names. So I never really had the courage to actually talk about it until the other day when I was in the theatre with some of my friends and they mentioned it to me. And they were like, Shauna, why do you have such a problem with it? And I was like, well, I don't. I don't. And they're like, yeah, but you do. I was like, I really don't. Like, that's just not me. And they're like, Shauna, honey, it's just you. I accept it. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not. And I kept denying it. I was like, I'm really not, guys. Like, please believe me. And they're like, Shauna, we've accepted you, so please accept yourself. And I was like, oh God, all right, okay, fine. So they gave me that confidence boost I actually needed. So I was like, okay, right. Went home. I was like, Mum, can I talk to you quickly? And she was like, sure. So we sat down and I wasn't really sure how to come about it. I was a bit nervous. I was like, oh God, what am I going to say? And she goes, Shauna. And I was like, yes, I already know. Sorry. I've known for some time now. It's okay. And I was like, right, okay. So I think it's time to actually admit it to all of you now. But I'm ginger. And I mean, like, I genuinely thought I was strawberry blonde. Like, I thought I was strawberry blonde for so long. Like, my life has been a lie. I was like, Mum, are you serious? And she's like, Shauna, you're ginger. And I was like, I'm pretty sure I'm strawberry blonde. No, Shauna, you're ginger. You've always been ginger. You're going to be ginger for the rest of your life. Fair enough, then. So, yeah, I've accepted the fact that I'm ginger now. But the thing is, let me just tell you guys something, okay? Gingerism is a real thing, okay? I'm sick of people coming up to me like, oh, you have no soul. First of all, I do have a soul, thank you very much, okay? And I'm not as fiery as everyone makes out I am. I mean, this isn't a really good point right now because I'm coming across as like very, very fiery, but you get my point. Like, it's not nice discriminating people based on their hair colour, do you know what I mean? Because there's, like, so many, like, different personality traits that comes with being ginger, and it's not nice because I'm actually sick of it. But I just want to let you all know that I'm ginger and I'm proud, so thank you.
I think we can all agree this is super important to learn to love ourselves and accept that everyone is different.
Next up, we have Chloe Stilianu with Yaya, the Ludo champion.
Ludo. Roll a six, get counters round the board, get to home, win the game. Seems simple, right? No, especially when you're playing with my AR. And for those of you that don't know, I'm Greek Cypriot, so when I say AR, I mean Nan, and when I say Grandad or Bapu, I mean Grandad. Whew. So getting back to the story. This Ludo board has been a part of my family all my life, and we have this arrangement since I was 7 years old that I see my AR and my Bapu every single weekend. Now, we had a routine on Saturday. She woke me up in the morning, my AR did, cooked me breakfast, her Greek food, go upstairs, she'll wash my hair, plait my hair, we'll go downstairs, put on the Greek radio, dance around the kitchen, she'll cook, and then it was Ludo time. And when I tell you this now, we would play Ludo for hours and hours and hours. She'd bring out snacks, she'd bring out drinks and pour herself the occasional bottle. Yes, bottle of wine. Where she tried to convince us it was cranberry juice, and we all knew it wasn't cranberry juice. But you could not cheat with my AR because she was always one step ahead of you. And sometimes I wonder why me and my sister set ourselves up to fail because we would never win. And the rare occasion that we did win, we all knew she had something to do with it because she wouldn't like to admit, but she would definitely help us win. But playing Ludo with her was the only time in my life where I felt safe and happy and had no worries in the world because she loved me. And then over time, the dancing stopped in the kitchen, the cooking stopped, and she stopped plaiting my hair, and my Ludo board got a bit more dusty, and then she became a beautiful angel up in heaven. And a few months later, my bubble decided to move back to Cyprus. So he cleared out a few things, and he gave us the Ludo board. Now, the funny thing about this Ludo board is that it has this magical power where every time you hold it, or look at it, or try to play it, this water comes out of your eyes, and you just start making weird noises. So me and my sister decided to put it in the cupboard and let it gain a whole new layer of dust and leave it for a couple of years. Until Christmas time recently, we were a bit down in the dumps and we decided to play Ludo. And see, this magical power still existed, and it did. We was crying like babies. But we played the game and we got through it. And although she wasn't there, she still was, because she will always be the Ludo champion. Thank you.
In my household, Monopoly can cause so many arguments and memories, including many board flips.
Up next, we have Zoe Clayton with a story titled No Makeup, No Me.
I'm a real girly girl. I don't go out anywhere without wearing makeup. I love it. I love looking at least three shades oranger, and I would hate to look like a zombie in the morning. Anyway, so I'm in secondary school. I've lasted 5 years of wearing makeup. And I'm in my last year, it's year 11, we've got GCSEs, revision, homework, and I'm so stressed. Anyway, there's this really, really strict teacher, and I always dodge her because I know she's going to tell me off for my makeup one day. But I'm in year 11, and I've done a pretty good job not seeing her, not getting in her way, not getting caught, but it's one day she sees me, and she's like, Zoe Clayton, get here now. So she comes to me, and she's like, makeup. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know I've got makeup on. And bearing in mind, she's glaring at me with her full face makeup, red lipstick, mascara, eyeliner, when I'm only wearing a little bit of makeup. Anyway, so she looks at me and she's like, makeup? And I'm like, yeah. And she goes to her classroom, she gets me these baby wipes that aren't even for your face, like as if I'm gonna use them. And she gives them to me and she's like, off. I'm like, it's not coming off. And so I go to the toilets with these baby wipes, and I'm like, I've got to make an excuse to not take this off, because like I'm not coming out looking like some zombie. Anyway, so I come out crying my eyes out, but it's all fake. Like, I'm not going to be crying, but I am crying my eyes out. And I'm like, I make up a massive story. I'm like, I can't take it off. These are really not good for your face. I have sensitive skin. And she's looking at me as if I'm talking gibberish. And she's like, head teacher's office. And now it's real tears. I'm really crying my eyes out because I'm like, this is the head teacher's office. I could be suspended. She's going to tell my mum this story that I've just made up. And my mum's going to be like, what is my daughter on? And so I'm in the head teacher's office. And she's like, Zoe, it's okay. Just sit down. And I'm bawling my eyes out. And she's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I can't take my makeup off. And she's like, it's fine. Just sit down. Calm down. And she's like, I don't care. And I'm like, what? She's like, I don't care, you're in year 11. I'm thinking, don't tell me that Mrs. Strict teacher has told me off and you're telling me, head teacher, that she doesn't even care. She's like, no, it's fine. So then she changed the subject to talking about how my family is, how my mum is, how my sister is, how my brother is. And I'm thinking, you don't care about the makeup. And she's like, no. And then it's 20 minutes in and I'm thinking, like, when's she going to tell me to go back to my lesson? I mean, I'm enjoying this. And she's like, I think it's time to go back to your lesson. I'm like, okay. And then she's, all the advice she gave me was just try and dodge the teacher so I can still me my three shades oranger. Thank you.
I've recalled many times that I was called out of lesson for wearing too much makeup. even when I didn't deem it to be that distracting.
And now we have a story from Connor Spate, which is titled The Show Must Go On.
Now, as soon as I joined drama school, I could not wait to perform at the Christmas concert. Not only just because I'd be performing in front of my friends and my family of my year, but I eventually got given a part to play a solo in the play as well. And I was given the song Maria by West Side Story. And I was over the moon with this. Not just because it's a great song, but it also means a lot to my family and me. So anyway, fast forward and it's the rehearsals and it's the week of the concert and we're all getting prepared and it's going well. But then Wednesday, at the end of the day, I start to feel like a little tingle in my throat. And I'm like, oh, well, that's a bit dodgy, but okay, it's not too bad, it's not too bad. So I talk to my teachers about it and they say, look, just take some water, take some rest, and I'm sure it'll be fine. And I'm like, yeah, it should be fine. Then Thursday morning comes and it's not at all better and a lot worse. And I try and sing and it's like really painful. And I'm like, what's going on here? What happened to water and rest? But all right. But I thought, don't panic, it will be fine. You got tomorrow, so it's all good. So I wake up Friday morning, it's even worse. And when I can barely even talk, let alone sing. And when I do try and sing, it's like someone's just got a dagger and just started to stab me to death. And don't even get me on about belting, because that's like someone's just played tug of war with my vocal cords. So, but in all honesty, I am starting to panic now. And I am getting a bit emotional about it as well. I'm thinking, well, what if I'm not going to be able to sing tomorrow? And all I want to do is make my parents proud and my teachers proud. Thank you. So anyway, I explained to my mum the whole situation and I'm panicking. I'm like, mum, mum, oh God. And my mum's like, oh God, I don't know. Yeah, my mum doesn't work well when I panic either. So so she drives me to the doctors and I explain everything to the doctor. I'm saying, you know, and I'm, you know, when you come to the doctors and you're like, you're just waiting for them to tell you how you're just going to magically cure it. So I'm waiting for that. I'm like, you know, come on, tell me. And then just like, yeah, you're probably not going to be able to perform tomorrow. And I'm just like, what? And when the doctor said that, my heart generally sank, you know. And I was just thinking, I went home that day and I talked to my mum and I said, look, mum, even if I sound absolutely awful tomorrow, I have to do this. There's something in my soul or at the back of my mind, but it was just something that was telling me, just do it, like the night t-shirt. So anyway, I wake up the morning of the concert, and as I'm on the car on the way to the venue, I'm just thinking to myself, look, even if it's a bit, your voice is a bit crap right now, just give it a bit of rest and just wait until you have to sing your solo. Maybe sing a bit before the songs that come in, but just wait for that. And if it goes all right, then just carry on after that. You're fine. So the performance starts. And I'm not gonna lie, I am so nervous. My heart's beating so fast, I'm sweating. And as the performance is going, we're going through more and more songs. And the more songs we're going through, I'm thinking, my solo's coming. And eventually it does come, and the spotlight goes on me. And I just take a big, deep breath, and I just walk forward. And I look at my music teacher, Mel, who's sort of like this with the piano, like, you ready, mate? And I'm like, I'm not sure, but okay. So I sing the first couple lines and it's okay, it's all right, I'm doing all right. I'm not cracking or screaming yet, like I'm dying, so that's not too bad. And as the song progresses, I'm doing all right. And then there's a bit where I have to belt and I have to go, Maria! And I'm like, every time I've been doing this before, my voice has just been killing me and I'm gonna probably go, Maria! So I'm waiting for that to happen. And somehow I go for it, I do it, and it actually hits, the note actually hits. I'm like, I can't believe it. I'm like in the back of my mind going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. So I keep going. Before I know it, the song's finished and I walk back and we carry on the rest of the performance and I'm so relieved and everyone applauded. And then after that, I just realized that no matter what, the show must go on and never give up. Thank you.
I think we all have a bunch of show mishaps that we tell everyone about. I remember falling out the back of a massive plant to immediately face plant onto the floor. But for some reason, we keep performing anyway.
Following on, we have My First Kiss by Eleanor Ring.
This is the story of my first kiss. I know, like, all, like, young girls find it really exciting. Like, ooh, woohoo, I'm growing up. Kissing boys, kissing girls, kissing whatever you want to kiss. But, yeah, so I was in primary school and there was this beautiful boy called Max. He had blonde hair, blue eyes. He was a year older than me. Oh, lovely, lovely stuff. So one day I bucked up the confidence to ask him in my maths class if he would like to go on a date with me. And luckily he said yes. So I was like, hooray, go me. But he said he would only go on a date with me if I kissed him first. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess. Like, I really want you, so I'll do it anyway. So at lunchtime, we go into the playground and we sit on this bench thing. And yeah, we're just kind of sitting there for like 20 minutes, just like not speaking to each other because I'm so scared. And I'm just like staring at everyone in the playground like, woohoo, fun. And then I look at him and he's like leaning in and I'm just like, woohoo, come on then. So then I start leaning in with my eyes wide open and I'm just like, and we're just like lip on lip for like 30 seconds, just like I'm staring into his eyes, and it's a really awkward experience. So then I was like, once I did it, I was like, finally, I'm a star. My heart was flying everywhere. I was like, I have a boyfriend now. I'm gonna tell all my friends I'm dating a older. And then he gets all of his mates to come over and I'm like, oh, he's gonna like introduce me to everyone. This is really cute. And then he goes, haha, I never liked you anyway. We're not dating anymore. And I went, hooray, thank you so much. I was like, that's so kind of you. And so I ran into the girls' toilets. I was crying my eyes out. And then I pretended I was sick so that they would send me home because I was heartbroken. But me and Max are still like best friends to this day and we still talk, and now he's the person asking me on dates and he's still the person asking to kiss me, and I say, ha ha, no. Thank you.
Some people dream of their first kiss and look forward to the day from being young, but I think we can all agree it doesn't always quite go to plan.
Next up, we have Emma Parker with Just a Small Town Girl.
On the 5th of December 2018, I got the letter saying I'd gotten into the drama school of my dreams. If you don't know me, hi, I'm Emma, I'm from Sheffield, and the school that I wanted to go to was in London. That's pretty far away from where I live, so I couldn't really travel there from my house every morning, so that means I'd have to move away from home by myself at 16. Holy crap. Of course I was more excited than I could put into words, but I was also pretty nervous, nowhere near as nervous as my parents. I've been very lucky growing up. I've had quite a sheltered childhood, brought up in a small town, very close with my family, so not living with them anymore would be really hard for me, but I knew that if I wanted to go to the school, I'd have to make some sacrifices. Before I knew it was September the 7th. The day had come for me to move out of the house that I'd spent a good chunk of my life in. Me and my mum were on the train on the way to London and she gave me the expected talk. You have to do this, you need to be more savvy, you can't do that, don't fall asleep on the bus. Funny story about that actually. On my second week of living in London, me and my friend Ella fell asleep on the bus. We just expected that someone would wake us up when we got to our stop. Didn't happen. We woke up six stops later, realising we had 5 minutes to leg it to school and get into warm-up, but don't worry, we got there, we got there. Anyway, yeah, so me and my mum on the train taking the first step to one of the biggest chapters of my life so far. Yeah, so all of us from PQA and Chester House, which is where I was moved into, became very close very quickly, and it was very hard not being with my family all the time, but it got easier as time went on. Of course, I made some mistakes, and I'm still making mistakes now, but yeah. Like, on my first week, I tried to pay for my weekly shop with my Oyster card. I've drank very, very out-of-date milk. I have tried to walk into the wrong room when it's dark. And I've fallen asleep on the bus. But I'm fine now. Everything's good. I guess you could say that I'm living the dream. Thank you.
I've always loved the idea of living in London, but we all know that it can be very expensive. So much so that you sometimes try to pay for food with your Oyster card. Right, Emma?
Up next, we have a heartwarming story called Struggling With Myself by Maxwell Jackson.
About a year and a half ago, I went through probably the darkest moments in my life. I'd just got through halfway through year 10. I was enjoying it, doing all right in GCSEs, lots of good friends, and my family was supportive, but I found I was shutting off and disconnecting myself from everything around me, and it was scary because I didn't notice I was doing this, and it was hurting people around me, and I was getting so negative and started getting really destructive with my thoughts. And it was midway through a first set of mocks, and I just broke down. I was so overwhelmed with emotions, but feeling so empty at the same time. It was weird, and one of my teachers always sort of looked out for me, Senora Brizuela, in Spanish, and it was in that Spanish test that she noticed I was having a breakdown, took me out and was like, you need to get this help. And it was because of her pushing me towards confronting my parents that I was able to talk to my mum about it. And it was comforting to know that she went through a similar thing in her O-levels at about the same age. And she went through hypnotherapy. So I went through hypnotherapy, and it was a painful 3 months of going into depths of myself I didn't realise I had. And I just want to thank my mum for doing that, my grandma for taking me and actually listening to me vocalise my own mind, and my dad for however he didn't really understand what was going on about it and was a bit apprehensive, he still supported me and loved me no matter what. And I've now learnt techniques. A few of you may see that I'm holding my thumb into my finger, and that's one of my triggers to give me the confidence to speak about this. And, well, I'm who I am now because of that pain. I'm in London, living my own life at 16, which I never thought I'd do. I'm at my dream college, doing something I love. And this pain helped me, and I hope you'll be able to have the confidence to confront that and help yourselves too. Thank you.
Nowadays, men's mental health is overlooked, and this story really highlights as Max's experience with learning that it's okay to talk to people.
Now we have Ellie Mae Chapman with The Climb of My Life.
The weather is not my friend. So 2 weeks before I had to do this massive charity climb at Mount Snowdon, which if you didn't know is the second biggest mountain in the UK, I sprained my ankle. Is anyone surprised? Probably not. I'm probably one of the most clumsiest people on the planet. Because of this, I decided I needed to be as prepared as possible, so I went to go outdoors. I bought walking boots, thermal socks, thermal leggings, thermal tops, thermal coats, waterproof trousers, hats, anything that said mountain on it, I bought it, you name it, I bought it. I felt so prepared, showed up to Snowdon, and it was the hottest day of the year. I didn't check the weather, obviously. And not only was it the hottest day of the year, it is the hottest day it had been in 5 years. So I started walking up this little hill that was taking me to Snowdon. It was a nice tarmac hill. Wasn't anything, there's no pressure really. And 5 minutes in, I was crying and crawling on the floor because I was too hot. So I got stopped, took off about 18 of my layers, and shot up the mountain like a lightning bolt, and I was actually the second person in our group of 100 to make it up. We got to the top, sat down, had our packed lunch, and fog just started to creep in. Not only fog, but then it started raining. And then it started hailing. So remember them layers from earlier? And all the thermals, this is where they came in handy. I put them all back on and we decided it was no longer safe because we could barely see an arm's length in front of us at the top of the mountain, so we decided it was time to go back down. I was obviously very tired, wasn't watching where I was walking, and completely slipped on a wet rock and decided, well, I didn't decide, technically the rock decided for me, and went completely falling down the side of Snowdon. I grabbed hold of my stepmom, thinking that she'd support me and I wouldn't go flying, but I took her with me. And we were just falling and falling and falling until we finally stopped, and I re-sprained my ankle in the process. I got up, I was throwing a hissy fit, I was crying, I was saying, this is it, I'm done, I don't care anymore, I'm getting the train down, this is it, no, just no. And a stranger walks past, and she stops, turns around, just stares at me for a second, like, what is this girl doing? And comes up to me and goes, if you get down to the bottom, I will buy you a bag of chips. And I love food, so who's going to say no to food, you know? So I basically ran down Snowdon and got me a bag of chips in the end. I mean, I know it's for charity, but I got my chips. So it's thought that counts. And to this day, if you ever need anything, all you need to do is buy me a bag of chips, and that will push me in the right direction to do anything you need me to do. Thank you.
This reminds me about the time I was on a dog walk in the Isle of Wight, and the next day I couldn't walk in a straight line as my puppy decided to take us on a walk instead. So that was about an 8-mile walk for me and my family.
Coming up next, we have Leah Bradshaw with a story titled Normandy.
I was 12 years old and it was my first holiday away from my parents. Me and my friends were so excited. We'd been packing for days before and the day had finally come. Our parents dropped us off at school and we lugged our massive heavy suitcases into the canteen where we waited for our coach. We were waiting for a while. The coach was about an hour late, but it didn't matter. Nothing was going to ruin this trip. We were so excited. The coach finally came and we got on and we were playing cards, making funny videos, whatever else 12-year-olds do on coach trips, and we finally got to the ferry. I'd never been on a ferry before. I was so excited. So we got off the coach. We were running round, looking at the ocean, taking pictures for Instagram. And after this, we got back on the coach when we finally arrived in France. About an hour in, we start thinking, what's our accommodation going to be like? Because we didn't know yet, but we'd seen the Spanish trip and they were staying in this really nice hotel that looked really nice. So we were thinking, maybe it'll be something like that. So we passed this big grey building with nets over the windows and I turned to my friend and went, what if we were staying there? But sure enough, we pulled in and that was where we were staying. So we walked out of the coach, got into this big grey dull courtyard. I mean, there was a basketball court. Pretty rubbish, but we thought, how bad can it really be? So we walked inside, we're met with 10 staircases to climb up with our massive suitcases to get to our rooms. So we climbed up these 10 staircases, we went into the room and it looked like the bathroom hadn't been cleaned in months. I don't think anybody had been there in months, to be honest, but we lugged our suitcases down and all we wanted to do was just eat some food. We went back down the 10 staircases, and my friend was gluten-free, so she asked for a gluten-free meal, and they gave us some bread. She thought, great, gluten-free bread. We went back up to the room after the meal, and she started feeling a bit queasy. She was throwing up for half the night. Wasn't gluten-free bread. Not great. After this, we thought the trip had been ruined. We thought, this is it. It's going to be so bad. But we woke up the next morning. We went on our first trip, and I talked to people that I'd never talked to before. I made some of my best friends. I made one of my best friends who I'm still best friends with to this day. It's been about 6 years now, so that's how I made the best of a bad situation. Thank you.
On my first school trip, I accidentally fell off the coach as we pulled onto the ferry, which then divided our group, and there we were, 18 12-year-olds, literally lost at sea.
Up next, we have Grace Carroll with Attention Seeker.
I'm an only child, and I think everyone's aware of like, the stigma around only childs. You know, they're annoying, they're like attention-seeking, they're selfish. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when I was 3 years old, I was a living, breathing example. So we were in nursery, living life as three-year-olds do, running around, and a boy sadly fell into a drain and scraped all of his leg. And obviously all the teachers rushed over to him and everyone was like, oh my God, I hope he's okay. Not me. I was like, challenge accepted. So I toddle off to a stone path. I pick up a stone and I shove it right up my nose. And I walk back over to the teacher and I crying boy in hand and I go, by the way, I've just shoved a stone up my nose. And the teacher flashes with panic. I get ripped away from the playground indoors and I'm like, oh, VIP treatment. And then I get sat down and they explain to me it's not normal to shove stones up your nose. And then they explain to me that they might need to call the hospital because after several goes of trying to get this stone out, it wasn't moving. I then start to bawl my eyes out and realise I don't really want all of this attention. So we blow my nose, not working. We use tweezers, not working. We blow my nose and use tweezers, it flies out. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why I never did it again.
We all did some idiotic things when we were younger. I fell off a bench and fractured my wrist. Then I slipped over in a lot of mud. And I got lots of things stuck up my nose, which ended up with some minor trips to the hospital. But you know, anything for attention, right?
Now we have Sam White with Strictly Best Friends.
Everybody has that best friend that has a secret that you need to know, but you really don't want to know. This story starts about 4 years ago where I met my best friend Isaac doing a production of Bugsy Malone at my secondary school. We only were rehearsing for about 2 months, and even within that time, we became the best of friends. And then after this, he joined my PQA, which is my Saturday school. So this made our friendship blossom even more. We were known at PQA for being absolute best friends. So if Isaac was crying, they'd be like, go get Sam, and then vice versa. Because I was such good friends with him, he started becoming friends with a lot of my school friends as well. This did cause some problems, but we got over them quite easily. But a big problem did arise between a small friendship group of ours, which included me, my friend Isaac, my friend Megan, and my friend Cara. So Isaac came around my house, which isn't very unusual because he comes around my house quite a bit. And we were in my kitchen and we were just walking back and forth, not thinking much, talking about the situation. And then he pulls out Snapchat and he's playing a voice note that Cara had sent him about the situation. So I'm just listening, walking up and down. And then I suddenly hear Cara say, oh, and I understand you like Sam and stuff, but, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, oh, no, this can't be happening. He can't like me, no. So I look at him and I'm like, what did that just say? And he was like, what? And then he walks over and pauses it. And I was like, did Cara just say that you liked me? And he looked at me with complete horror, wanted to start crying. It was horrible. So he legged it through my house, through my dining room, through my lounge, to my front door. My dog started chasing him because obviously they thought something was happening. And then I just kind of walk slowly after him and my mum's like, is he all right? And I was like, probably. And I get to the front door and he stood facing the wall like 2 inches away, not speaking to me. And I walk in and I didn't know what to do. And he was like, you weren't supposed to know that. I was like, well, of course I wasn't supposed to know that. You didn't even tell me. And then he goes to give me a hug, but I just stand there and neither of us really know what to do. So then he leaves, I shut the door, and we both scream simultaneously. And then imagine me running up the stairs, trying to find my phone, and we're both trying to contact Megan, because she's our first person to contact. And I get on the phone with Megan. And on this phone call, I find out that my friend Megan had known for a year and a half, my friend Cara had known for 6 months, and about half of my PQA Saturday at school had known. So I was the only person that didn't know. So for about another 2 weeks, I'm like in school, like sitting in class, and it's all I could think about, because it starts double guessing the entire friendship. But then eventually everything started sorting itself out. I first saw him at a School of Rock production, and we were absolutely fine. But then, 2 weeks later, he goes on a date with a girl that eventually becomes his girlfriend. So I guess it took him 2 years to get over me just because I found out.
We all know the awkward moment where we find something out we're not meant to. I think Sam knows this just a little too well.
And last but not least, we have Alfie Buckley with The Cow.
So this is probably the last time I would underestimate a cow. So it all started when my mum just wanted me to gain a bit of independence. She said, look, mate, you need a job. I'm tired of you asking for money. So just get a job. So I did. I got a job in a pub. It was about a 30-minute walk away from me, but, you know, I would sprint there, you know, get a bit of cardio in. I'm, you know, I'm trying to stay fit. I was quite a chubby kid, so wasn't, you know, it was decent. So, yeah, I'd walk through, like, a couple of fields. It was all, it was like, it's quite a nice walk. Like, yeah, it's just nice. I like it, you know, go through a couple of fields, it's decent. But this one time in summer, so we skip maybe 3 months ahead, the job's going well. I mean, the manager doesn't really like me. I don't know why. Maybe I just, I don't know. Maybe I wish I wasn't cut out for the job. But anyway, I tried. I made sure I, you know, did all the tasks that they would give me. But anyway, I was walking through, went through the same route I usually go through, and out of nowhere, there's just cows everywhere. And like, this has never happened before. Like, I've never ever seen cows here before. So I'm a bit confused, a bit startled, but at the same time, I don't have time to ask the cows how they got there. So I'm just like, right, I'm going to get on with it. I'm just going to walk through, you know, mind my own business, because now this is their territory. So I'm just, you know, casually strolling, and I see a couple of them, they're, you know, proper looking at me, proper staring me down. I'm like, I'm just going to carry on walking, because it's a cow. It's just a cow. Like, never, ever do that, right? These cows were dangerous. These cows were lethal, and they were rapid, right? Faster than me. So I'm just walking. I'm casually, you know, giving it a go, and I see a couple of them, you know, they're starting to walk up to me, maybe they want to have a chat or something. I don't have time to speak. I'm trying to get to the exit. I'm not too far away from the exit by now. But as I get close to the exit, and I'm, you know, I'm constantly just keeping my eye on the cow, don't actually want to get attacked or anything, so I'm just making sure that they stay far over there, and I'm just going to go to the exit over there. But out of nowhere, a sea of cows just, they're all darting at me, darting at my position. I'm like, right, so the exit is probably about 5 minutes that way, or I can go all the way back there. And I think, well, you know, what's probably, you know, the good idea? Maybe go to that one, because that's only 5 minutes away. By the time I've done this, the cows have already got there. It's like they had some sort of plan. Like, okay, let's call it Team Blue, Team Red, right? Team Blue, they all bolted to the exit. Team Red were like, oh, we've got the idea. If Team Blue get exit, we'll go and get the other exit so he cannot escape. And I don't know, there we can eat you, we can flatten you, we can do what we want. Like, once you're cornered, like, I'm not leaving. So obviously Team Blue have, they've just set themselves up by the exit, so I'm not getting out of here. So I'm darting off. You know, I'm trying to beat Team Red. So practically, I'm now in a race with Team Red. And I'm also wearing a red T-shirt. Now, I know, obviously, you know, I used to watch, like, a lot of programs, and there was, like, Olé, and there's, like, the red flag and all that stuff. And I know, obviously, cows aren't bulls, so I'm not that stupid. Actually, yes, I am. But that's besides the point. I'm wearing a red top, so I thought, you know what, I'm just going to double my chances of staying alive. So I thought, just whip off the top. Just rip it off. Just take it off. And so now I am running for a field. There is probably about 15 cows chasing me, and I'm just waving my arms like this, trying to get out of there. There's cars going past. I can see some woman was just like, Dad, what's going on? They're like, oh, just look ahead, mate, just carry on driving. I'm like, all right, cool. So I'm bolting it. I'm already late for work. Like, I should have been there like 10 minutes before. So I have to go a different route. Anyway, I'm a bit shaken up, a bit worried. I'm still a bit confused as to what happened. I don't know why I was intimidated by cows, but I genuinely was. So I get there. I'm at work, you know, obviously I did cry a little bit. I was just a bit like, I was just overwhelmed. Like, I got sprinted at by cows. Anyway, I get there and I'm like, oh, look, it's kind of a bit of a weird one, maybe, but I was just late. I'm really sorry. I didn't exactly want to explain. It's a bit embarrassing, but at the end of the day, I had to give them the story and say, look, I got chased by cows and that's the reason why I'm late. And they all just started laughing at me. You know, and they were like, yeah, sure you did, mate. Like, none of them believed me, and I did get fired. But it just made me think, next time I see a cow, I will just be aware of it, and I won't just casually stroll past like I am Jesus. I will step aside and be like, you know what? This is your domain. I'm going to stick on the other side. I'll see you later. Anyway, thank you for that.
Would you risk your life, your sanity and your new trainers to just get to work? Hopefully I never have to go through this myself, but at least Alfie has told us how to survive it.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you to all of our performers for their stories, and thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to the PQA Studios podcast.
Please subscribe to our podcast and social media channels at PQ_FTA. Look out for our upcoming projects that we will announce on all our social media channels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye.